HSPs can be really powerful critical thinkers, and where better than to think critically than about all of these issues that relate to equity, equality, diversity, and inclusiveness. Our minds are very useful here. How do we call upon our resilience in these times?
Welcome to Sensitive Stories, the podcast for the people who live with hearts and eyes wide open. I'm your host, psychotherapist and author April Snow. I invite you to join me as I deep dive into rich conversations with fellow highly sensitive people that will inspire you to live a more fulfilling life as an HSP without all the overwhelm. In this episode, I talk with Brian Torres about the vulnerability of sharing your sensitivity when others misunderstand you, the parallels between sensitivity and being part of the LGBTQ+ community, and the essential need for more inclusive HSP representation and community spaces. Brian is a licensed marriage and family therapist from Los Angeles, California. He has previously served as a mental health and crisis counselor with the Los Angeles LGBT Center and the Trevor Project. In his clinical practice, Brian specializes in working with BIPOC and LGBTQ+ individuals, as well as highly sensitive persons. With a passion for research on high sensitivity, he has presented at conferences and offers insightful training on high sensitivity within the LGBTQ+ community. For more HSP resources and to see behind-the-scenes video from the podcast, join me on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube at Sensitive Strengths, or sign up for my email list. Links are in the show notes and at sensitivestories.com. And just a reminder that this episode is for educational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for treatment with a mental health or medical professional. Let's dive in.
Welcome, Brian. Can you start off by telling us a little bit about how and when you discovered that you're highly sensitive?
I first heard author Dr. Elaine Aaron on a podcast, and I think it was Alanis Morissette's podcast. If you haven't heard it, everybody should listen, but a lot of great thinkers and psychotherapy thinkers on there. And so I heard it there, and I just remember them going into detail about all of the traits of being an HSP, and there was a lot that just connected at a time that was really important for me. It's also important to know that I was in grad school for clinical psychology at the time, and you're learning so much at the time, I'm sure you're aware. And I remember getting really interested in highly sensitive people and all the sort of academic and scientific research behind it. That's where I really got excited about it. And then at the time, I was looking at parallels between being highly sensitive and what it meant to be a LGBTQ+ person in this world. I remember doing research and writing something about that and just diving in and looking at those parallels. And no one had ever researched the two before simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So they all found each other at that time. And then I really stepped into understanding and claiming HSP as a part of my identity.
I love that you claimed it.
Yeah. It shifted here and there over time. But I remember in the beginning, I couldn't know enough. I wanted to be in the community. I was looking for it to be affirmed in so many ways. I think it settled down a little bit, which is nice. But there was a lot of fun, exciting, like novel energy in the beginning, which I really just went hard with. I think you and I met at a bunch of events, and I was just thirsty for more connection around it.
It's true. At the beginning, when you first realize, I think a lot of us go through that process. I need to learn everything I can about it. I want to be in community. Finally, this part of me gets to be seen and understood. Mm. Was that your experience?
Yeah. I think it felt very vulnerable too. So you're wanting to connect with people about it. And I remember I found a nugget about myself, this little golden treasure piece. And then here, and other people have it too. And we can talk about it. And so it felt really special. It still does. Mm-hmm. But I remember in the beginning, it was all kinds of exciting.
It is exciting. I remember it too. I was also in grad school when I learned about it. And it was like my whole world just opened up. You talked about it being vulnerable. I'm curious about that. I haven't heard you say that before.
Oh, I think there's something about like maybe you're opening up yourself to questions, criticism. Mm-hmm. If someone doesn't know about the trait, maybe they're eye rolling at you or trying to prove you wrong, so to speak. But you're opening up to people about, hey, I have this trait and here's what that means. We live in a world where the word sensitive can be so stigmatized. A lot of people equate it as being something weak. So when you're claiming I'm a sensitive person, depending on where you are, that you can't really always gauge with the reactions of folks when you open up in that way. So I guess that's that vulnerability, right? You're inviting people into your sensitivity and you don't always know how they're going to take it.
Yeah, it's so true. We often work so hard to hide away our sensitivity, and now it's the opposite. Here it is, front and center. We're vulnerable. I haven't really thought about it that way, but it's so true when you start to make that process of unearthing your sensitivity and starting to share it with people.
Maybe that's what the exciting part about trying to find community is, because you're wanting not to feel like you're the only one.
Yeah, exactly. I'm wondering, how did you get to the podcast? What happens before? What puts you on that path of, I'm seeking this out? For me, I was seeking, but looking at parallels with introversion, because I was trying to figure out, who am I? What is it? And that wasn't explaining everything about me. Mm. And then just talking with people, that information Dr. Elaine Aaron spoke made its way into my hands. What were you seeking, or what were you trying to figure out about yourself when you landed on that Alanis's podcast?
There's a little bit of bias because I've like been an Alanis fan since I was like a child. Uh-huh. So there's that. But yes. But being a psychotherapist is not my first career. There's been other hats I've worn prior. Right. I noticed that when I came to going back to school to study clinical psychology, that there I was traveling once backpacking and got just leaving a career and didn't know what I was going to do next. Didn't know who I was and what I was doing with my time on this planet. I was reading some book while traveling with a friend, and it was really getting you to investigate what were some of the through lines and all of the things that you've been interested in. And for me, there was this through line around this interest or this hunger around the human experience and finding the common denominator between everybody. And I've always been interested in psychology. So I guess a podcast like that was something I would listen to. And I was in grad school at the time. So I think there was just a thirst for more knowledge. And I had a professor once say that all research is me search. And I think there's a part of us that like looks for ourselves in things we're interested in studying. So I don't think it's accidental that you hear this thing and then it overcomes you. There's other things I've listened to where I'm like, oh, I don't really see myself in that, but I see the value in that. But there's something about this that I remember feeling like I could pinpoint a lot of what the traits were in my life. I could go back and, oh, this makes sense. This applies to me as it relates to how I show up in relationships, how I show up in relationship to work, to stimulation and time. Just so much started to make sense.
The light switch got turned on.
Yeah, like, I like
everything
that.
Became clear. You have to go back and almost rewrite your story a bit through this, this information.
I think that's also a big piece about working with HSPs and mental health. It's like, some of that work is going back, and it's almost like you get to put a new filter on your life. And if you look at it through this lens, how does this start to make sense in a different way? Where, like maybe some of the things you went through or some of the things you endured feel different. If you were a highly sensitive kid or a highly sensitive young person, it can hold different meaning and hopefully a more positive one.
Yeah, I like the metaphor of that through line. And when you listen to that interview, sensitivity is one of my through lines.
It's funny, I've never thought of it that way, but that actually makes a lot of sense. I guess it is. I got the sense that there was something different about me as a kid, that something that the world around me, when not knocking the environment that I grew up in, but thinking that I don't know that the people around me were really equipped to handle me in a way. And I think in my family, there's a kind of one size fits all approach. And I just don't think that was the approach with me. And I was just starved for this different type of connection. I just saw things differently and wanted to talk about things in a very different way. Or I don't know. I mean, it's one story about a reframe. I used to have this belief or this narrative about me that I used to get lost a lot when I was little. So I always had this way that it was painted for me was that I was irresponsible. I would wander off. And so I held that for years. Gosh, like I was a bad kid. Then I really realized what had happened is that we'd be in these crowded places and my attention would take me towards something that would catch my interest and just deep fascination. And then I would get lost because I'd lose who I was with. But then I remember thinking, wait, that wasn't my job. I was 4 years old. Yeah. So I started to look at that as I didn't get lost. You lost me. Oh, I'm just a little kid with tons of wanderlust. Of course, I need to be looked after. My interest is going to take me somewhere. That's one small example of, oh, I've healed from that a little bit.
Yeah.
That's a story about myself. One. Yeah.
The you lost me. Kids are curious already. We're taking in our world. But as an HSP, you know, a little sensitive one, you're deep diving. You're immersing so deeply into every little thing around you. Of course, you're going to forget to track what adult you're with.
Yeah, but it's funny being a sensitive person now because of that experience. It's really hard for me to watch stories or narratives where kids get lost. I remember, it makes me laugh now, but Finding Nemo or Finding Dory, once. Can't really go back there.
It's too personal.
Yeah, it feels really personal. But yeah, I just remember that example just now.
I think we often have this experience as sensitive people, as kids, where we get put into this box or this certain set of expectations about how to be, and we then start to disconnect from our sensitivity. Was that happening for you too? Do you feel like you lost connection with some of those parts of yourself? Mm. That young, curious Brian who would deep
dive? Yeah, I think so. I think maybe you and I have talked about this before, where I think for me, really early on as a queer person, sensitivity would get conflated or confused with queer identity. So at a really young age, something that felt gender atypical for a young person assigned male at birth, oh, this is because you're queer, this is because you're gay, XYZ, where those things have nothing to do with each other. So I feel like as a sensitive person, there's this just deep awareness of the environment around you and this want to self-protect. There is a part of me that's, oh, because I don't want to be ostracized or stigmatized, I'm going to either hide some of these parts of myself or be so hyper achievement oriented or perfectionistic around them that if I'm going to indulge them, I'm going to be the best at them. Okay, if I'm going to be creative and I want to act as a kid or I better be better than everybody.
The best.
Or if these aren't things I'm wanting to pursue or bring to light, I'm going to really hide them.
Mm, all or nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. Well, I just feel like, oh, I was like, yeah, that's all that nothing type of thinking. It's great material for my therapist.
Everything is fodder for therapy.
Yeah, yeah. But just thinking about those dichotomies, binaries start really early.
They don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. We've talked about this before, but I think it's so important that there does seem to be a lot of parallels with queer identity or LGBTQ+ identity and being highly sensitive. And like you said, they're not directly correlated, right? There's no causation between the two. Not that I know of. And I know you've done more research on it. Can we dive in and talk a little bit more about the parallels? You talked about, you know, the self-protection piece. And I know
we've
talked a little bit about the coming out experience as both revealing those parts of yourselves. Hmm. What do you see as the parallels between these two parts of yourself?
I can see where there are similarities. I feel called to say I don't think they're the same. I think they're very different, specifically systemically. LGBTQ+ folks are literally fighting for their lives at this time in our country and then everywhere else. But yeah, I remember when I was in grad school and I was looking at parallels. I had this hunch. I was like, I bet there's more highly sensitive LGBTQ+ people in the community. And I don't know. Maybe some part of me wanted to prove that or something. Never did. But I in doing that, as you do research, you start to look to what's out there. And I just was looking at all of it and then looking at it side by side. And the things that stuck out to me are there's maybe higher prevalence to experiencing more mental health challenges in both communities. I know this to be more researched, but it's more anecdotal for HSP, but more research for LGBTQ+ folks that being inclined to or using more psychotherapy services. And I guess I got really interested to think about what does it mean to be both? What does it mean to be a highly sensitive person and somebody in the queer community? Because as a highly sensitive person, you have differential susceptibility. How I like to distill it is that you can feel the positive stuff even more so than a non-highly sensitive person, but you can also experience the negative stuff even more negatively than the non-highly sensitive person. So I imagine a queer person experiencing social or familial ostracism, marginalization, stigma, what that must feel as a sensitive person, and getting really interested in how they might be impacted even more because of these two things. But then on the flip side, because I don't want to just stay in the dark there, is that what is their capacity to feel queer joy, right? That community is going to mean that much more. Mm-hmm. Things like pride are going to feel that much more positive or beneficial or affirming. I thought about and continue to think about a lot is what is it like to have those two identities and what it could mean.
What does it mean to have both and how are they connected or related to each other?
Also thinking about what is the percentage of the population now? We think it's 20 to 30% be highly sensitive. And I know that number for LGBTQ plus folks is getting larger, but it's lower. Mm-hmm. There are a lot more HSPs in the world than there are folks that are mm-hmm. Identifying as a part of the queer community.
Yeah. What's important about that for you?
P's are 1 out of 4. It's a minority, but it's still a lot of people. There's more likelihood we're finding each other. And it's not something that's picked out socially as mm-hmm. something that is seen as bad or immoral right. or less than.
Right.
There are ways in which it is, but not overtly, where it's not being legislated against, being criminalized, or that you're not a target for in some ways. People who are LGBTQ plus and highly mm-hmm. sensitive. Are there ways that, I think you named it a while ago, sensitivity gets hidden, or is there permission to be sensitive? I think that actually extends itself to a lot of different identities, races, genders, and sexualities. But how do we understand sensitivity? For me, I understand it's through a very specific lens. And are we not making room for a lot of the way sensitivity is expressed because we don't really study it in these other ways?
You're saying there's lots of different ways it's expressed and maybe we don't always recognize it. Are you talking about specific populations or just specific individuals?
How I've learned about being highly sensitive is through a lot of the literature and the scientific research, mm-hmm. which I just have to understand is from a very specific lens. And that lens being white, cisgender, heterosexual, mm-hmm. more often than not, largely female lens. We've understood sensitivity as expressed through those identities, right? That's how it's conceptualized. So we may not know that a person is highly sensitive because it doesn't come in that box. And I remember inviting a Black colleague of mine to one of our groups, and we had a debrief afterward, and I'd asked what her experience was like. And I don't remember verbatim what she said, but she expressed growing up sensitive. Who has permission to be sensitive in these spaces? Yeah. Does sensitivity look the same for her as it does for the other people in the mm-hmm. group? And is space being made for that? I remember having that conversation, and it really struck me because we expect it to show up this way and we bond over the ways it shows up, but it could be showing up in all these plethora of other ways, but we don't see it that way because we don't see it as this one thing.
We're only seeing it through this one very specific lens.
Yeah.
White, cishet, females. This is true of in a lot of different cases with research and representation. You're seeing a very specific lens, and the HSP community is not immune to that. There's a lot of work to be done to include intersectionality in our conversations and the different ways that sensitivity is expressed in different communities or even different individuals. But we've only seen this one very specific way. And there's so many ways that sensitivity shows up and we may not even be recognizing it missing opportunities to connect over it is what I hear you say.
Yeah. Just thinking about it like from another lens is that it can be so gendered, where I know in my work with cisgender males, I think you and I know that when people take the self-test, men tend to score lower because a lot of the questions are socialized in this way. They don't answer in the affirmative for a lot of things. And sometimes they're told, take the test, the child for test. I even think about when I worked with highly sensitive men, where we're seen as this monolith, highly sensitive people, but I've made more and more space for noticing that sensitivity can actually show up as irritability, can actually show up as anger. And we think of it as a soft, very empathetic, very welcoming, kind of gentle energy. And who's to say that is not also highly sensitive? It's just, it's a way that the trait shows up. And I don't know, maybe there's more permission to express irritability for men or anger, because that feels more, there's more permission in order to access that versus some of the other stuff.
Exactly. So that could be the representation of sensitivity for someone.
Yeah. Which,
if you looked at it on paper, you would never think that was sensitivity. Let's say there's a young boy who's sensitive and struggles with anger or irritability or even distraction or whatever it is. They're getting sent down an ADHD path. They're getting sent to anger management. They're not getting sent to nervous system care and learning about their emotions and appreciating all the layers of their experience. we just can get completely thrown off track.
I know for some cultures too, thinking about the one that I grew up in, does sensitivity show up as stoicness? Does it show up as shutting down? There's just so many possibilities. And I feel like sometimes we're only looking at a few.
Exactly. It's so limited. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the community you grew up in. Would you like to share more about that community or how sensitivity is treated in your community?
Yeah, both my parents are from Mexican descent. So my dad's first generation, my mom's a couple generations Mexican-American. So I don't have the whole story of sensitivity thought out. I'm always constantly thinking back and looking at it. But I know that there is, which I don't think is that unfamiliar for a lot of folks, is that the expression of emotions is not something that was allowed. Feeling anything other than obedience or just putting a smile on your face, there wasn't a lot of room for expressing anything that wasn't agreeable. I ever felt the call to cry, it wasn't something that was really held with a lot of care, or it was suck it up mentality. I know specifically in my environment, it was immediate goes to where other people have it worse. So you learn to invalidate that, okay, if I take in the suffering of the world, I can't suffer. It feels like it's a lot of really just soldiering through. And I think about the immigrant experience and how much is it a part of my family's culture that there is a part of just soldiering through, right? You can't really stop and think and what might be seen as self-indulgent to navel gaze or look inward and do this stuff because we are thinking about how we're going to survive. Right. And that becomes intergenerationally passed on.
Earlier you said, who gets to lean into their sensitivity? Who gets to express sensitivity? Who gets to have a relationship with it?
I never thought of this, but is claiming being highly sensitive a privilege?
I would say it is.
Yeah.
I have always thought that. It's a privilege. Right. We've been in community together, in person and online. Who shows up there the most?
For sure. Yeah. Right? It's very apparent to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even thinking about our own privileges, like our ability to say that, even my ability to exist in some of these spaces because I pass as white, depending on who's asking, or I don't think this, but I pass as straight, whatever that means. I'm able to exist in these spaces because I don't stand out sometimes, which give or take the environment we're in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that those are going to be privileges, or just even being able to go to grad school, access podcasts, all of these things, the access to knowledge and information.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, a lot of that is not available. And it speaks to how much work we have to do in our HSP community, a lot of communities, to expand who gets to be in the community.
I've been thinking about that a lot in the last couple of years because I've had a little bit of disillusionment and in a way that maybe a lot of us has had a sort of reckoning where for me in the highly sensitive person community, or maybe as it relates to therapists, because that's the community I have more proximity to, is I remember in June of 2020, when the Black Lives Matter is really at a height again and George Floyd gets murdered. I remember seeing in communities and online that specifically amongst highly sensitive people, I'd hear things like, oh, I can't look at the news, it's too much, or I'm too sensitive for this. And I remember some of those conversations being really activating. And it's only recently dawned on me that fragility can get confused for sensitivity.
Yes.
I'm not saying you need to look at the news all the time, but being able to look away from some of these issues is a privilege. And there's some of us that can't. Mm-hmm. So when I go to these community events and it's a sea of predominantly white faces, while it may not always be intentional, I don't think it's accidental that someone may not have been intending to do that. But I don't think if someone was putting intention and mindfulness and trying to create impact, I don't think they would just end up as all the same identities, cis, white, het people. But I still see these, hey, come to this highly sensitive retreat. And it's just the same catalog of folks. And I just, come on, I know we're out there. I know there's other folks out there. I feel like getting on the soapbox here, but I think making more of these spaces inclusive is raising Black, Indigenous voices of color. And that takes effort and it is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And you have to lean into that. I can't speak for other folks. I know the work can be uncomfortable, but I think that's where that fragility piece comes in. Just thinking about the work we have to do to make spaces more welcoming.
You're right that the fragility piece does get confused with sensitivity and it can be the go-to response. I just can't do it. I think we're actually selling ourselves short as highly sensitive people because we are actually very resilient.
Yeah.
Right.
I love that.
We have a lot to bring to the table and everyone suffers if we disengage. Because we are the seers, right? We are the the canaries in the coal mine, so to speak. So yeah, we need to keep our eyes open. Now, I don't think it's sustainable to keep our eyes open in the way modern media operates. Like you said, you don't have to see everything all the time, but do take in what's happening.
Yeah.
At some level, in a simple way, instead of just turning off completely. I think it's important to stay engaged, but figure out how you can do that.
I remember attending a virtual workshop that our colleague Sydney James did. I think it was titled Being Highly Sensitive While Black.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Sydney, if I'm not getting the title of that workshop right. It was a couple of years ago, but something that stood out to me that's so useful is, as a highly sensitive person, she had said, and I'm paraphrasing, when it comes to activist pursuits, what's within our capacity? And I get that. You're honoring sensitivity. And maybe it is about figuring out what is in our capacity. Does searching for more people to be in our community feel like that's within our capacity? Like that, just the content we're consuming. Who are the voices that we're listening to? Something for me personally that I've been doing is, when it comes to any personal reading, I don't read books by white authors anymore. Mm-hmm. If I do read a book by a white author, they're usually LGBTQ plus. Thinking about going into book clubs, am I making space for content written by other voices of color, things like that. Those are just small to me, very digestible ways that activism can show up that, as a sensitive person, feels within my capacity. Mm-hmm. Are there times that I'm on the street in a protest? Sure. Is that all the time? No. Do I want to be there? Hell yes. But I think you and I are very aligned in our values, but I think as a therapist, a lot of my activism shows up there. Oh, yeah. And I think a lot of the conversations you and I are having are the conversation I'm having with the clients who come and see me.
Yep.
And I'm very upfront about that. I guess in that way, for me, the personal and the political aren't really separate.
And you bring up such a good point that there are accessible ways to move the needle as sensitive people, right? We're not always going to be on the front lines. That's not what we're really wired for. I was on the front lines a lot in my 20s, but now in my 40s, not so much.
Yeah, you gotta also honor your body and where exactly. You are. So true. Yeah.
There are ways, being mindful and intentional about what you consume, books, media, what workshops you participate in, who you reach out to for community. How can we stretch a little? How can we stay engaged? How can we make this community better and safer and more inclusive?
Yeah. I think I remember reading in the Highly Sensitive Person book, there is in the second chapter a list of attributes, and one of them is oriented towards social justice and conscientiousness. And I remember thinking, oh my God, we're all the same. These things are so important to us. And I catch myself, I may make this error, it's a human error, where I think we're all created the same, like HSPs. I used to think we're a monolith, and I know now we're not. But that we still can be oriented towards those things, but they may show up differently. And we are very much products of our culture. So we're very impacted by that. Peace can be really powerful critical thinkers. And where better than to think critically than about all of these issues that relate to equity, equality, diversity, and inclusiveness. I think our minds are very useful here. Mm-hmm. It is important. How do we call upon our resilience in these times?
Needed more than ever.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy because I think a lot of times we do fall victim to the fragility, to the overwhelm, and all of the reasons we're here. Elaine Aaron talks about this a lot. We have an evolutionary purpose for being highly sensitive. It's not just random, but we believe that we don't have value, or we believe that we're just doomed to feel overwhelmed all the time, and then we just can't engage in the world. That's a big problem because we do have a purpose. The healers, the seers, the decision makers, the critical thinkers, we have a lot to offer. So do other people, the non-HSPs as well. It's a complement. It's a partnership.
Yeah. Symbiotic, yes.
It's symbiotic, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think we need to recognize that, like, own our worth as sensitive people, and also tolerate sensitivity showing up in different ways.
Yeah.
And in different forms. It's not just one thing, which we've been led to believe, I think.
I guess the parts of me that get cynical or really curious is it accidental that in a world filled with more stimulation and more technology that we're more exhausted and we're unable to detach from phones? I don't think that's always accidental. So what I mean by that is that, yeah, we're feeling more depleted than ever.
Yeah.
We're feeling capitalism has us all drained and in competition constantly. I think we're all in chronic overarousal. Now we're grappling with all these sort of struggles around attention and social stuff. And it's my way of saying that I also think sometimes this isn't our fault. It's also a product of the world we live into, which can make it harder for sensitive folks to muster the energy. I hear a lot of sensitive people just can see being sensitive as this debilitation because it's just, I'm always fried. And yeah, it can seem that way.
If that was one of your clients or one of your friends and they're saying, I'm always fried, I can't do anything, what do you say in response to that? Because I want to have empathy and I also want to empower that person personally. I'm just curious what your approach would be.
I think I would validate the hell out of that, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, and mm-hmm. I think this is a conversation we have often is what feels possible, what is within your capacity. I'm hearing there are parts of you that want to make a difference or want to help. Mm-hmm. How do we honor those parts, make room for them, while also honoring the parts of you that are sensitive, that are tired, that are feeling kaput in some mm-hmm. way, and or taking stock of, I think sometimes when we talk with highly sensitive people, one of the tenets is living a lifestyle that's congruent with your trait. So maybe we got to look at some of the stuff you're participating in. Is that sustainable? Is your job sustainable? I can think of a lot of things, relationship, all of these things that are these sustainable, or are these also things that are stealing a lot of gas from your engine, so to speak?
Mm, what a great metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to think a lot about, which is so funny because we're talking about technology, talking with HSPs is you have a phone battery. Every day it starts. Exactly. If you're lucky, it charged overnight and you got 100, but that thing needs to be recharged, right? And like certain things are going to take out more juice than the other. And are you actually, that's something we come back to, are you recharging your battery? And are you going to go to this party or this work event on a 10%? You're in the red. Right. It's probably not going to be at your best then.
Yeah, you're not. I always think though about, is recharging also a privilege?
True. Yeah, mic drop there. That was good. Yeah, it is. I think it can be. Because there's this whole thing where sometimes I even, now when I say the phrase self-care, I'm like, oh, a part of me irks a little because I'm like, that feels very privileged. That became so popular in culture for a little while. And now does what people were describing as self-care, I'm totally generalizing, but they're like, get a massage, get a facial, go to therapy, do these things. And I just think about how much money each of those things cost. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. But I think what you're also saying is what is in your control within what you have available. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It's not about going to the fancy spa or getting a massage or taking off work for a vacation, but can you make small choices even throughout the day within what's in your control?
Yeah. Lifestyle shifts. This phrase that's been coming into my mind a lot in the work is thinking about breaking patterns. And there are certain patterns here that we can break to make some changes. I just think about like when someone goes through something and maybe they've gotten on the other side of that challenge. I think about, are there reserves of energy that are available because that thing is now behind you? Yeah, that's how we take care of ourselves and all of this, or just when everything feels so hard. Yeah, I struggle with that too, right? And there's a voice in my head that says, you what would be available to you if you just got out social media? And I don't feel like I have the most egregious habits, but I'm human and I'm on it hours a day. And that feels hard for me because there's a part of me that feels like I'm going to lose connection to what's going on. And I feel like that's really important from an activist perspective. Mm-hmm. But I know as a therapist, I would be telling myself, does it mean we can't have some boundaries? doesn't mean we can't have some limitations. And I know that we all could benefit from stuff like that, these little shifts and breaking of the pattern. There's a way for me to still connect it and find out information on the ground without having to be in it 8 hours a day.
Exactly. Yeah. We're breaking patterns in small ways, but also more impactful ways.
I like that. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. If you could share one message with HSPs who are trying to shift those patterns, whether it's internally or on a bigger scale, and they're looking for a community, what would the message be?
This question around community, it feels like such a big theme globally right now. And it feels like in my work, it feels like this comes up a lot with folks. Mm-hmm. Where is community? How do we find it? Where is it created and fostered? And I'm speaking of being online, I'm so privy to articles about people writing from this perspective of how the social has changed in the pandemic, or people spending more time on their own, or community spaces having shifted away. So I feel like it's not easy. I know that it's something that I'm figuring that out for myself. I've had a lot of my friends move away, and because of my values and my views, some of my relationships don't fit my life anymore. And there's lots of grief. I think we're all navigating some of that. But I guess maybe for HSPs, finding community around other HSPs, I think that's one of the tenets, right? Of the HSP care, right? Be around other HSPs. And I think that's really great. It can be hard. I think as we're waiting for more things to come back in person and vivo, it might be hard to find a HSP branded thing or organized thing. But I think sometimes if we're only looking for other highly sensitive people, we may lose out on the opportunity to just deeply connect with people who are just good people or make us feel a way about ourselves. So I would say trying to surround yourself with people who honor those sensitive parts of you, the deep thinking, the conscientious. I'm saying this with some kind of humor, the neurotic parts of you, if you call that like the overthinking parts. There are probably people out there in your life or could be in your life that just make you feel good and make you feel seen and connected. And they don't necessarily have to be highly sensitive or identify as an HSP, but doesn't mean we shouldn't appreciate and honor and invite those people into our lives. And I think some of the older tried ways of finding people that align with your interest can be a way or access to that. And I will say, though, it does take time and investment because you may want to go to something once and say, I didn't connect with anyone there. And community takes time and it takes consistency. It may take showing up to a place repeatedly. As a sensitive person, if you're introverted, it may take courage to walk up to someone, and it may not happen the first time you meet them. Those are my thoughts lately about socializing and building community.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The reminder that community does take time, and it's okay to give yourself permission to slowly ease in, especially if you're a more sensitive introvert, or you're figuring out the spaces you feel most comfortable in, or where you might find people like yourself.
Maybe places like churches, schools, or working in person, which I know has changed for some folks from working from home or being remote, if that's something you can do. Or maybe you're in spaces with people more consistently, and that's how community can form. But maybe I notice adults have challenges with building friends because we lose some of those things from the earlier years of frameworks of communities that are already in place for us.
Right. It's true. We don't have as much built in as we used to, especially as things start to change and go more online or, where you're working more remotely.
Yeah. Not that I was ever making friends in grocery stores or anything or restaurants, but everything's deliverable now.
It's true. The chances are even lower, though. I did want to highlight what you said around if, let's say, you don't fit the typical HSP mold, that it's more about how you feel with someone. Do you feel seen and connected and you can really show up and feel safe? That's more important than the person identifies as an HSP.
Yeah.
It's more, can your sensitive part show up? Can your whole self show up?
Yeah, I in this little anecdote that when I do present or a couple of conferences I've done, and we'll talk about personal stories to make the very science heavy stuff relatable. Is this person who's a family friend ended up just passing away. I think it was last year. But I remember being a really young kid, maybe between the ages of 9 through my teenage years. But we had a family friend that would constantly either pick me up or me and some of my siblings up to go to the movies. And I, as a kid, just was obsessed with everything related to cinema. So what I went to undergrad for the first time. It just, I'm still in love with movies, just love them and just love talking about them. Most of my HSP sensitivity parts come out around this because I'll talk about it deeply. After I go to a film, I'm thinking about it for days. I'm reading reviews. I just process so deeply and I love it. This person used to take me, just meet, be like, oh, we're going to go to the movies. Do you want to come with us? And would just love to hear me talk. And would ask me my opinions on something and was like, oh, this is coming out. We want to take you to see it. And I just remember being like, oh, that was the one place where it was just about me. I'm one of 5 kids. So it was just about me. And it's, and this person really connects and appreciates the side of me. And I think that person, whether they knew it or not, I remember seeing them shortly before they passed. And I had such gratitude because I remember that through the framework of my sensitivity, that this person was such a positive figure for me. And it didn't look like what we think it looks like, but I had this deep connection with this person. Yeah. And it was a life raft when I was a kid.
Yeah, they saw something in you and then they nourished it.
Yes, that's a beautiful way of saying it. Yeah, nourished it for sure. I didn't feel any shame or otherness around it. Yeah. It really impacted me in a really great way.
Yeah, I can tell you were just lighting up.
Yeah.
I know. It's so sweet.
Yes. Yeah. It's a good memories.
Leaning into those people that do give you nourishment, that give you that life raft, that help you feel seen, regardless of how they identify or if they're sensitive or not. It's more about how do you feel when you're with them. I think that's really important.
Yeah. And if we don't have those people in our lives currently, biting the intention into creating spaces mm-hmm. for those people or creating spaces for those relationships, because I think they're important. Mm-hmm.
They're very important.
In the HSP community, when lockdown happened around the pandemic, I remember hearing people say, yay, I love it. I don't have to deal with people. And I think that didn't last very long because we're all social creatures. We need people to survive. We die in isolation. Yeah. Even introverts need people. And so I just say that and saying that just a reminder that, yes, well, alone time and downtime is so valuable to the HSP, but people are just as valuable.
People are just as valuable. And it's not that we needed less people. I think it's we needed more decompression. More downtime. Mm-hmm. And we got that. And now it's, where's the community?
Yeah.
Now I need to lean in back to that.
Yeah. I feel like I'm seeing people trying to learn to walk again. How are we social again?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like we're reacclimating, learning it for the first time almost. And needing to build systems back up for a community as if they never existed in the first place.
Right.
It feels hard.
It does. And then you're tired all the time. It's just, it's that it's difficult.
Exactly. It is. Yeah. It is. And hopefully we can start to shift that. But I think what we're saying is, where can we take some initiative and create spaces that we want to have around in the world? Mm. Yeah. With our little bits of energy left over.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Brian, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
When people are just coming to understand the trait, like I remember for me, there was this energy, it felt very urgent.
Yes.
And I think you had asked me before we talked about what's changed in your relationship to sensitivity. And I thought about that. And it doesn't feel as urgent, which is nice because it feels like it's integrated in a way. And the practice of being a highly sensitive person just feels like an imperfect practice. And what I mean by that is that I did a lot in my life to honor the lifestyle or honor the trait in a way that feels compatible. But sometimes I don't get it perfect. Sometimes I'm overwhelmed and I'm irritated because I didn't do all the things I was supposed to. But with this knowledge, I think a lot of it feels a little bit more seamless. Things like transitions are so important, but now they're baked into everything. It's automatic in a way that maybe in the past I would question it. Now it is non-negotiable most times. But I don't think about it anymore because it's just the way I operate
now. It's part of your life.
Yeah. So it doesn't feel so urgent because I just don't push it in the way that I used to.
I know what you mean when you say you've baked in some transitions, but I'm curious if you could give an example of that.
Yeah. I love this.
Who doesn't know.
I think it's such a great example of talking about how early do you arrive to the airport?
Yes.
Or something. It can be airport substitute. Event substitute right. thing. But I notice in relationships, there's often one person who likes to get there an hour before, and I'm the person I want to get there 3 hours before.
Same.
I love to, I don't want to wait around. I'm like, that's great. I love to go look for a magazine and waste money on candy, like things I don't need. That is a part of the journey. Yes. But it's also because I know for me, I'm not my best self. Or in my highest self, or my nervous system doesn't feel regulated when I'm rushing. And that is through everything. Even before we signed on today, I was grateful that I had an hour. Thinking about it even earlier this morning. It's been on my mind. It's going to be very gentle as I come in. I'm going to be in the seat, as they say, to be ready. And so I just feel like that is just such a practice. I leave time before appointments, before getting anywhere. But I've always done that. And now I'm just giving myself more permission to just be that way. And some people comment on it. And now I just don't care as much.
Because you're living it, right? You see how good it is for your nervous system.
Yeah. And I think other people benefit from it. I will say. They really do. And they pretend they don't, but they do. They benefit from it. I'm a planner that I'm thinking ahead, worrying a little more than maybe most folks. Yeah.
And I love getting to the airport early too. It's baked in slowing down time.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else just shuts off. You're at the airport. You can't do anything else.
I'm packing for a trip 5 days before mentally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Those are just like small ways it shows up. And for me, transitions have always been a cornerstone of sensitivity for me. I think they are for a lot of neurodivergent folks too. So
yeah, agreed. Just having that space to integrate in and then move out. It's so important, right? Because there's so much processing that happens.
Yeah.
You need to, like you said, bake in time for that. It's such a good example. Those things that feel maybe out of reach or other people just don't understand or push back on, eventually they become second nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I like to have a lot of time between things. And it's so important. And yes, do I maybe do less or I cram less into the day? Yes, but it's I'm more balanced at the end.
Yeah. I also think I want to honor good old age too. I've also,
yes,
just like, I think that's also natural too. I think Elaine Aron even talks about that in one of the books, pointing out that maybe you don't notice sensitivity in your earlier years because you're just, the call of age is much more out and stimulating. Right. And we all maybe hit a shift sometime. That definitely happened to me.
Me too. It's true. Because in your teens and 20s, you're primed for socializing, mating, and all of those really deep instinctual urges. And yet, those aren't present as you age.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that then the sensitivity shifts a bit. Brian, thank you so much for this conversation. I really appreciate it. If folks want to find out more about you, where can they do that?
My website that you can find out or just reach out to me there. It's my first name and my last name, BrianTorresTherapy.com. Just where everything is. That's the easiest way to get in touch.
Thanks so much for joining me and Brian for today's conversation. What I hope you'll remember is that sensitivity doesn't look the same for everyone. And however the trait presents for you, is completely valid. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to the Sensitive Stories podcast so you don't miss our upcoming conversations. Reviews and ratings are also helpful and appreciated. For behind-the-scenes content and more HSP resources, you can sign up for my email list or follow Sensitive Strengths on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Check out the show notes or sensitivestories.com for all the resources from today's episode. Thanks for listening.